Welcome to the Obsolete Gamer Show. I am J.A. LaRock. Thank you for joining us. And we are very happy and honored to be joined by John Robert Matz, who is not only an award-winning composer, but also a Chicago native like myself. Thanks for coming on and joining with us today.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, about Chicago, were you born in Chicago, or did you just have a studio in Chicago?
I have to immediately follow with the disclaimer of I am a Chicagoan, in so much as Chicago is my city. I've generally lived about 30 minutes or so outside of the city my entire life. So I get into the city from time to time. It's my town, but I can't claim to be the true native born Chicagoan, like in town, unfortunately. Alas. I live out in the burbs a bit.
Oh, okay. Well, still, I mean, it's close enough. You get to visit. I mean, is there a specific parts of Chicago that you really like going seeing? Like, I grew up in the north side, so I love going to see Soldiers Field, going to the museum, stuff like that.
That same here. Like, I love going to, like, see, you know, when I was a kid, to get to see, like, Cubs games and stuff like that with my dad, and getting down to, I'm a music snob, so, like, getting to go to Symphony Center and Lyric Opera and stuff like that and things of that sort are always wonderful highlights of my forays into town. And so that's kind of where I have had most of my Chicago life is on the north side and along, like, you know, along the lake and things like that.
So were you happy that the Cubs won then when they won the World Series? I mean, after that drought.
Oh, God. I can't even. Oh man, if my dad were still alive to see that, he would have been ecstatic. At some point in my childhood, we stopped like being a serious sports watching family, because when we tuned in, we would always lose. You know, it was like we were not like a hardcore. You know, Cubs or Sox kind of family. You know, we were Cubs fans, but like we didn't like hate on the Sox. So we would root for whoever was, you know, we root for our home team, whichever one it was. But whatever we'd actually tune in to watch something, they would always abysmally lose. The Bears would get crushed. The Cubs would be trampled, et cetera, et cetera. And so we stopped watching at some point. Because of that, it's like you tune in the radio and it would be going so well, and then inevitably it would all go wrong, you know. And so it became like a thing, like don't actually listen, like follow from a distance, but don't listen too closely, it'll all go wrong.
Yeah.
And so I broke that at the 11th hour and caught the very end of the game, and that was just, oh man, tremendous. I can't. Not a huge sports fan or a sports fan from afar, still just like the energy in Chicago, just ecstatic. They were like, even out here in the suburbs, like there were fireworks going off, people like honking their horns, cheers. It was great. It was wonderful. Just a tremendous experience. And wonderful to finally see happen.
Yeah, I mean, even if you weren't into sports, just seeing something like that. It's like even with Cleveland now, I'm in Miami, so I have a rivalry with Cleveland. But to see that they didn't win anything for so long and they finally win something, just like with Chicago, you got to feel a little bit happiness, even if you're not a big sports fan. Now, you're doing composing for gaming. I mean, obviously you do a lot of other things I want to get into as well. But growing up, was there games that you played? Was there gaming that led you to your career path?
Oh, absolutely. Although my background is a little bit weirder than most of my colleagues about my age with my background. I didn't have a game console growing up at all. We didn't. That's almost true. We had a Texas Instruments computer that could take like cartridges or tapes or had like a basic. We were always like years behind the times. So we had this Texas Instruments. Home computer, which is basically a console, and you could run like Atari type games on it, and some fun stuff. But for the most part, all of my gaming experiences were on PC, and even then, they were always a little behind the times. And so I was digging up things that were like 4 or 5 years old, and playing them. So I was playing, like, System Shock when System Shock 2 was coming out, you know, because we couldn't run System Shock 2. I'm like, oh, this, everyone's talking about this. I got to look at the first game. And so I have this, like, you know, for many years of my childhood, just a lot of classic PC games in my background. So your LucasArts adventures, you know, I was a big Star Wars nerd, so like Dark Forces and TIE Fighter and all that stuff just kind of like is indelibly burned into my brain. I got very crazy as a child and like assembled like an old Compaq 486 DX25 laptop on top of like an external CD drive array that was powered by a power inverter, and then I took this nightmare across the country on like a family vacation, like road trip, and just so I could keep playing Dark Forces in the car on this ridiculous laptop. It just is real dumb. But so a lot of classic PC games, like I like shooters, so things like Dark Forces and Doom and things like that. Like I said, Star Wars nerd. I like Sims. I played a ton of stuff, Falcon 3.0 and SU-27 Flanker, and I got all these old like jet fighter sims and tank sims, like M1 Tank Platoon and like things like that. Like but none of those were like super musically inspiring until this kind of third-person adventure game, basically, or third-person platformer shooter adventure sort of thing. Called Outcast came out. I think it was like 1999 or something like that, right on the edge of the 2000s. And it was a voxel-based game, so it had no 3D acceleration, which meant it pretty much ran terribly on everyone's computer. But it had these stunning environments, and it was this kind of almost Stargate-inspired story where, like, you know, they send a guy to another planet, and there's an alien civilization and everything. The music is phenomenal. It was written by a guy named Lenny Moore, who is, I'm very glad to say, is a friend and colleague of mine now. Score was all beautiful orchestral music with orchestra and choir. The Moscow Symphony Orchestra, I believe, performed it. And it was really eye-opening to me because we had suddenly, you know, for years I'd been playing things that had, you know, on PC... You know, it was all dependent on how good your MIDI card was. If your sound card, like, sounded, like, good, you got better sound. I even experimented with, like, plugging in, like Casio synthesizers and stuff like that into my sound card to drive audio for games. But, like, that was generally not a great, great solution because you'd have, like, your sound coming from an external source for your music and then your game sound over here. But I try to get like good sound out of these things, and suddenly here was this phenomenal, lush orchestral score that was not only written really well but performed wonderfully. And I've been a musician forever. My parents were musicians. I've been playing in bands and orchestras and stuff like that. And suddenly to hear like video game music be like this lush symphonic experience, this sound that was. To my mind it was my snobbish child, you know, elitist mind. It was real music all of a sudden. You know, like I knew that the other stuff was incredibly clever and very well composed, and there were composers working, but suddenly it was being interpreted by real musicians and performed in this way, and it was just it pulled me in real hard. It was about that time also that like Grim Fandango came out, and like that has like all these wonderful live jazz performances. With the crew that Peter McConnell put together, and that was another one of these things. Just suddenly, it's like, oh, real players, like real musicians, real music, and suddenly, like mind blown kind of moment. And I was like, I could, you know, I'd always kind of dabbled in composition or arrangement or things of that sort. Maybe I could start doing that. Maybe that's a future. Maybe that's a path. I don't know. That's basically it.
Now, I mean, obviously, you've had training not only in composing, but also singing instruments, all this stuff, and also what you were talking about, being a music snob, having parents that are also in music. Would you say there was any maybe a worry that, hey, video games, like, why not do classical? Because that seems like, you know, something that if you're in a classroom, everyone's talking about the great classical works, and then you're like, but I love these video game scores. Were people accepting of that because they could understand, hey, this is great music, or was it like, no, that's kid stuff?
It depends a lot on, like, I have a really great love of classical music, but I think that pretty much as I've started to write more and more, like, there has been this kind of awakening of interest in video game scores and in film scores, pretty much concurrent with my kind of getting into writing music in general. So I've written concert music that has, you know, to me at least, that is very similar to my writing for video games or my writing for films. Like, it has similar kinds of textures and timbres and ideas. It's just entirely contained in, it's just unfettered by having to serve an image or having to serve, a static kind of, or not a static, but a linear progression, like of a film or something like that, or having to serve a moment in the game. I can tell a story entirely independently. And so writing or enjoying video game scores or film scores, I don't think it's ever been, like, looked down upon by my peers. But then again, I have never, like, forced the issue, I guess I should say. And growing up, I had a weird background in that I was homeschooled all the way through high school. And I had a lot of friends in our homeschool group, so I hung out with them a lot. You know, and we played video games, and we made music and stuff, so there was never, like, a weird, you know, it was never like, oh, you, well, we're doing music, you know, we're in our homeschool band and orchestra and stuff, but we're also doing, you know, we're also playing GoldenEye, you know, we're also playing, you know, Mario Kart, and, like, there's no, oh, this is kid stuff, because we're also doing the kid stuff. We're not going to make fun of ourselves. Right. But, you know, getting into college and university kind of level studies, I don't know. There are a lot of, you know, music geek and geek. There's a lot of crossover nowadays, at least. So maybe, I guess, some professors might look down on it and be snooty about it, but I haven't really experienced that.
So, I mean, once you were done with schooling and things like that, how long was it before you got to your first video game, you know, position?
I think about 2 years. Like everything in my life, I seem to have gone a very circuitous route. I was a music education major, so I studied to be a music teacher, and in fact, I do teach music, high school music, part time at present. But I graduated in 2009, and my first gig started in 2011. And that was for a game called Artemis, the Spaceship Bridge Simulator, which is this weird, crazy, awesome Star Trek-style five-player game that takes over an entire house or an entire living room or something like that. And it's basically, you know, five players and five computers, and every computer is its own bridge station in a Star Trek-style bridge. And that was my first game that I scored. And that came entirely, like, Should I tell the story of that?
Oh, sure.
it's a real dumb story, but it was fun. At that time, I had kind of started dabbling in composition. My sister was a film major. I scored her short films. I was actually scoring, I'd scored some stuff when I was in college, some little film stuff, and so I was writing music, like little things here and there on a fairly regular basis, you know, and trying to kind of do stuff for film. And I thought about video games, and, like, the idea of doing music for video games was really cool. I had no idea how I'd get into that. This game, you know, had kind of appeared on the scene. I'd seen it come across a few websites that I read, and they announced that they were doing a demo they're releasing a demo that if you played the demo, because it's a game that is not really built around, like, its own graphics, it's more built around the ridiculous gameplay environment, this social environment that it fosters. He had this promotional idea where the developer, Tom Robertson, had this promotional idea that you should play the demo with your friends and film it and upload it to YouTube and then send him an email about it, and he would repost it and send you a copy of the game for free. And I thought, that's a very clever promotional system. And I tried out the demo, because it was a cool game, but it's like $60, you know? So I was like, eh, let's try this out. I realized it had no music. And I thought, this game needs music. And everyone else's videos they'd taken, you know, Jerry Goldsmith or James Horner's or, like, scores or John Williams scores for Star Trek or Star Wars and putting this stuff, you know, scoring their little, you know, fan videos of them playing this game with, you know, legitimate, you know, scores stolen from other things. And I thought, maybe, just maybe, let's do something real dumb. Let's take some music that I've written and score our video for this ridiculous thing, with my music. And then I will send him that, and then I'll say, hey, you know, by the way, if you like the music, I wrote it, if you need music for your game. And so I thought, this would be easy, I'll just take music I've already written, it's great. So we shot a video, it was super amateurish, it was wonderful, real cheesy, real dumb, and I sat down and said, okay, I'll just pull this music for this little sci-fi short that I did, I'll borrow this and put it in, and I realized, like, oh, our video is like 7 minutes long, and the music I've written is nowhere near substantial enough. And so I wound up scoring this entire thing, threw all that out, scored the entire thing from beginning to end manually, originally. I wrote an original score, there we go, words, and sent that off to him with the same kind of like, oh, and if you like the music, I wrote it. I couldn't help but notice your game doesn't have music, and I think it would help if it had that, or I think it would be a benefit. I don't know what I said, but apparently I said the right thing. And he liked it, and I got the gig, and that was how that happened. It was like, let's burn a week of work on a gamble, and one of the things I've learned more and more is sometimes you have to try the risky, crazy gambles, and sometimes they pay off, and sometimes they don't. But that's how I got into scoring for video games. Sorry.
Fortune favors the bold, they always say.
Apparently, sometimes at least.
I was looking at the different ones like Fossil Echo, Gods of the North, Rodina, Werewolf and a Girl's Sorority, Gunpoint. when you're scoring these different games, like, I assume it's kind of like with film, television, everything, but what is the process that you go through when you say, all right, how am I going to find the right music for it? Is it a matter of just, do you get to play it, or are you just seeing images, a story outline?
Depends a lot on the game. Sometimes I have nothing to go by. Sometimes I have descriptions. I mean, sometimes all I have is, like, here's a few lines of text about a thing. Sometimes I get very complex descriptions. Sometimes I get a sketch. Sometimes I have a completely playable experience that I can, like, play, and it's curiously empty and devoid of sound, and I have to kind of, like, figure out what I want it to be. Sometimes I'll end up with stuff where they temp tracked it with other music from other games or from films or classical music, and I have to look at it and say, okay, that's the kind of feel they want, now let's just mute that and try to come up with something of my own. And so in the case of, like, a few of those things, some of those are films, some of those are games. In the case of, like, Rodina, which is this sci-fi, this sci-fi space flight combat adventure game that takes place over an entire solar system that is, you know, full size. You know, it's a game where there are several planets in a system, where there are lots of different potential encounters, and I decided to, you know, and what I'd get for that was, like, here's a description of a planet. Like, what is its atmosphere like? What's the feel, the environment of this? What's the, what kind of enemies might we face, etc. But, you know, that wasn't, like, super, super specific, you know, and basically it allowed me to kind of craft a theme for every planet, craft a feel for every planet. And that was all basically on description. Like, there wasn't a lot that was playable at the time, or it wasn't totally playable at the time. Or even if it was, there wasn't a lot to do. It was just a big empty planet without everything populated on it yet. Other games like Fossil Echo, I got descriptions, and I get, like, sketches or, like, a shot of a level. Or, you know, in the case of cutscenes, I get rough animatics or even fully fleshed out bits. But for the most part, I was working kind of very early with, like, here's a picture of this. And here's, like, a brief description of what will happen. And then I'd take that and kind of put it in my head and let it mush around, percolate, stir up, and then I'd come up with an idea and go from there. Other games, like Artemis, for example, back to the very beginning, like, that was a fully functional game. Like, everything is there. It works pretty much the way it was supposed to work. Everything was more or less functional. And I looked at how the game plays and how the player, like, the play loop works and what the kind of flow and structure of gameplay is, and then devised a very complex, probably needlessly so, interactive system for how the music would react to player action. You know, in that game there is like this, you know, it's basically, it's like you have moments where you're not in combat, you have moments where things are happening elsewhere that are going to cause you some tension. There are moments where you're in a full-out fight, there are moments when fights are desperate. And so all of these events kick this, like, tension meter up and down behind the scenes, which determines what the music is going to do. You know, it's very kind of sophisticated, relatively sophisticated, remember this is the first game I've ever done, relatively sophisticated system behind this, and that's built around how the game works. Most of the time, for other things at least, I'm coming in very early, and so I am able to kind of, you know, do stuff that's going to influence the game a little bit in some ways, not only it influencing me. In Fossil Echo's case, there was like a whole sequence that was basically outlined, but effectively left undone specifically so that I could write like a 2.5 minute piece of music that would follow the player's actions very carefully, and then they built the game around that, and then I made the music reactive to match the player's actions. So if the player does things perfectly, the music lines up perfectly. If the player doesn't do things perfectly, the music gives time back to the player, gives, you know, a bit of breathing room so that it matches what the player is doing, and so that they still arrive at these key moments in time with the music. You know, and that was a case of, like, I got a description and nothing else, write the thing, they built the game around my stuff, and then I changed it up after the fact, or modified it after the fact, so that we'd have that reactivity, that give and take with the player. You know, but every game is different. Every project is different, and everything takes a different approach. You know, some games like Fossil Echo are super linear. Others, like, I'm working on a game right now called For the King, which is out on Steam in early access. That's a very open world game, from my perspective at least. You know, you could go from anywhere to anywhere, and the music needs to transition and move and react accordingly. You know, and that's a very different approach than that kind of linear progression that Fossil Echo, for example, provides.
It's interesting because in like film, a lot of people may sometimes talk about how they love a specific song or something, especially if it's done by like someone that's famous, but a lot of people don't mention the score. But with video games, you have a lot more people that actually appreciate the music. They'll actually say, hey, you know, sometimes I mute music in games, but this one I really love. With that, just having players acknowledge and appreciate music, and then things like, you know, you winning the Gang Rookie of the Year Award, how does it feel to know that that kind of work is appreciated by peers, also by, you know, the people that are playing these games?
It's wonderful. I mean, who doesn't like to, like, see their work or their colleagues' work, like, get recognition, like, get validation, get appreciated? You know, when people tell me that they like my music, when they say, like, I finished playing Gunpoint and I was whistling your theme and I had that stuck in my head for days, I'm like, number one, I'm like, I'm so sorry that it's stuck in your head for days. But at the same time, it's like, I've done something right. Like, I've written a thing that's impacted someone in some way, even if it's only just to be an earworm and some, you know, and get stuck in their head. But it's kind of wonderful. Like, you know, film scores, you know, are kind of where our world kind of comes from. But, you know, but the video game music fandom, like we have Final Fantasy and like Legend of Zelda concerts and Pokemon concerts and stuff like that are just celebrations of video game music. I mean, that's kind of crazy that we can fill a house full of people who would not go to see the average symphony orchestra concert, and that will flock to these things and love it. And it's a celebration of video game music and a celebration of that, you know, that franchise, I hate to use the word franchise, but that universe's sound, that has been created by, you know, 1, 2, 6 composers, whatever, over the course of its existence. And that's kind of a wonderful thing. You look at Video Games Live, like, that's an amazing thing. And getting to, getting to have that sort of thing, in our world, getting to bring that kind of appreciation for video game music is really kind of a blessing.
And, I mean, since you brought up Final Fantasy, I have to talk about Tactics, because I saw on your page about that, and, I mean, so many people love Final Fantasy Tactics. It's weird, because you have people who love Final Fantasy, and then they never played that, and then you have other people like, man, that game was so awesome. What was it like working on that project?
So the Materia Collective is where this all comes out of. The Materia Collective is a really wonderful, weird group of people, composers and arrangers, and musicians that all have kind of come together to make a series of really fantastic remix albums, basically arrangement albums of these classic video game scores. And sometimes they're much longer than the original video game scores because we have so many fantastic entries. And the Tactics album we did, Zodiac, is one of our most recent and one of the coolest, I think. The game itself is fantastic. Like, I've always loved Final Fantasy games for their music and for their stories. And I've never quite, like, I kind of suffer, that's not really the right word, but suffer through the combat. As a kid, I didn't like this whole, you line up in two lines and, like, your guys run out, their guys run out. Like, that doesn't make sense. Like, give me, like, I feel like chess makes more sense. And so here was this sudden, you know, this game with this crazy, you know, deep, like, Shakespearean backstabbery story of, like, intrigue and cool, like political nonsense and all wrapped up in this very interesting, arguably one of the more grounded Final Fantasy worlds. And then you have a combat system that is more in line with, like, coming from a PC perspective, like a Jagged Alliance or an XCOM kind of combat. And that's, like, that's a killer combination. You know, I'm ashamed to admit I never finished it. I got stuck in a situation where you had to, like, grind for 10 hours to, like, be able to beat a primary story fight. But it's an amazing game. One of the ones I'd love to see more of, in that series. But that music project, Zodiac, was a blast to get to be a part of, both to write music and then also to sing and play on other people's tracks. And is kind of also spun out another project I'm working on right now, which is a musical adaptation of Final Fantasy VI, which I'm working on with a friend of mine, Jeff Swingle, who I did a song with for Zodiac, and that's kind of like, that was our test bed to see if we could pull this nightmare off. Nice. And so we're kind of setting up for that right now. But that's in the future. You can keep an eye out for that.
My sister plays piano, like classical piano, and she had a lot of friends who were in music too when she went to school. And, you know, they talked about places they'd love to play, like in Chicago, New York, things like that, Australia. What was it like when you got to play in Carnegie Hall? Because that must have been, like, incredible.
Oh, it was crazy. It was great. And that's actually one of those really wonderful things. Like, I was in college, I was part of a really fantastic choir program, and we did a lot of repertoire, but one of the things we had the opportunity to do was to go and perform in a kind of multiple college program at Carnegie. And so it was our choir and, like, two others from two other schools that we put together, and I think we did it was Mozart. I don't think it was, I cannot remember. I feel like, I feel bad because, like, the moment is burned into my brain more even than the music is. And Carnegie is a fantastically interesting hall acoustically. Like, it's really excellent. From the stage, I get super nerdy about this. Like, from the stage, from what I remember, mind you, this is, like, easily 10 years ago now. which seems terrifying when I think about it. You know, like, from the stage, like, you hear everyone fairly well, but they really, like, in the, you know, once you're out in the hall, like, oh, it's just, it's a tremendous sound, and getting to perform there was, you know, a real kind of highlight of my performance career, as it were, career, such as it is, you know, academic career, at least. You know, that was a blast. Like, Carnegie is wonderful. I've gotten a chance to perform at Symphony Center in Chicago a few times. You know, to tour, around, Europe, with youth orchestra as a vocal soloist, you know, and sing. The worst thing you can possibly do is sing Italian opera in Italy, and that's, like, just terrifying. As an American, terrifying. but they didn't hate me, so apparently I did something right. It's fun. It's fun, and it's kind of wonderful to stand on a stage that, you know, to be in a place where so many luminaries and icons and where so much history has happened, and then kind of feel like in some small way you're contributing to that. You know, I don't know. That's the best way I can kind of try to communicate what that's like.
Now, I mean, obviously, like I said, going over and seeing all the things you do, from composing, singing, instruments. Then I saw voice acting, too. I'm like, wow. Have you got to... What project were you able to do in that, or is it something that you're just launching?
It's something I've dabbled in. I've done a few adventure games, little indie stuff here and there. I got some stuff in the works that I can't talk about right now, but that should be fun if it turns out. You know, voice acting is... Yeah, I did a lot of acting in college and high school, and so, like, you know, there's only so many things you can do with your life, I guess. You know, voice acting is kind of taken the back burner. Like, I've done more commercial voice acting for toys and things like that, than I have for actual dramatic properties, so far, but hopefully that will start to change in the future. It's something that has been a passion of mine. Like, acting has always been kind of a part of my life, and getting to start to dabble in voice acting the way I am has been kind of wonderful, and I'm hoping that kind of continues to grow. But yeah, it is very much something that is a new kind of venture, you know, in the last several years that I've kind of been doing, you know, slowly but surely, you know, building up more characters and more gigs in that field.
Well, obviously, with all the things you do and how busy you are, I understand when I read about your Steam backlog. So, in your list of Steam games that are sitting there waiting to be played that just ends up being upgraded every time you load up the computer, what's some of the top ones that you're just, you know, you're dying to play?
I want to finish The Witcher 3. I want to do that. I want to play Dishonored 2. It was given to me by a very good friend as a birthday present and has sat there uninstalled. No, it's been installed and not actually played. What else do I want to do? I want to finish Oxenfree, which is this wonderful, like, disturbing adventure game on an island. It is the most, like, 80s teen movie in the world. Like, it's like, it feels like it's set now, but it feels like, I don't know, like it's like a thriller, almost horror game, but it's I'm not a big horror fan, which is why I'm glad it edges more towards the psychological thriller side of things. You know, about these teenage kids who go to an island as part of, like, the senior thing, like, everyone goes to this party, but then, like, only a handful of them show up, and the weird dimension fracturing nightmares begin to happen, and I don't know everything yet, so I can't spoil it. I want to finish that. Ugh, so many things. So many awesome games out there that I want to put more time into, that I want to finish, you know, and actually get through. They will have to wait. I have, most recently, mostly because it's short, I did start and finish the wonderfully riveting, first-person story slant adventures slant. It's not really a walking simulator, but Virginia, if you've heard of it, It is an amazing, weird, low-poly experience. Like, a lot of people have likened it to very Twin Peaks-esque in its kind of presentation. It has no dialogue, which puts it kind of in the same realm as Fossil Echo, in that there's no dialogue anywhere in that. And the story is told very, very prominently by the musical score. It was a very interesting game to kind of experience. It's a story about two FBI agents who go to a small town in Virginia called Kingdom to investigate a missing kid who's disappeared. The story gets weird from there. It took 2 hours of my time, but man, it was worth it to kind of go down that strange rabbit hole. I'm a story junkie, if you haven't noticed. I'm like a huge story fan, so like if I can get a game I like I've played, I have like scraped like tiny little snippets of time out and played like Rocket League and Battlefield 1, like, and those have been the games I've played the most, you know, in like 15-20 minute increments for like the past several months. But when I can sink my teeth into like a real story, like a game with a overarching plot and cool characters and, you know, things of that sort, you know, like a BioWare RPG or something to that end, where there's like real character development and a fascinating universe to kind of explore. Like, that's the sort of stuff that I really love to do. And like, this was a way to kind of have that kind of, I keep saying kind of, but a way to have that sort of universe, or at least a fascinating, riveting story told in a way that I could actually fit into my schedule. So hopefully, now that the school year is out and the summer is done, and I think I have most of my E3 preparations sent out and taken care of, I can finally take a breather and play some video games. You know, actually do the thing that I want, that I do this for. Yes. Anyway,
is there not like saying that this would need to be done or disrespect to anyone that's done it, but has there been any games that you've played and you said to yourself, man, I wish I could score that, even if they've already been done? You know, like I said, not because it needs to be better, but just because you're like, wow, I wish I could do that.
Oh, man. That's a hard one. That's a hard one because, like, the games that I want to score have already been scored so well that I don't think I could do, like, one of the things I've realized more and more as a composer is that we all of us composers, all of us musicians in game audio, at least, have very different kind of, very different styles and very different musical identities that we bring to a project. And so getting to, so it's like, I love the scores, like, My good friend Austin Wintry, like, writes amazing music, like his Journey score and his Abzu score and his Assassin's Creed Syndicate score, and like all these things are wonderful. And they're not what I would quite write, but the worlds that he gets to write for are so inspiring to me. Like, I would love to do that sort of stuff. But I don't think I could ever want to, like, replace those scores. I would never in my weirdest nightmares, like, want to see those scores replaced with my own stuff, because they're so perfect. And they do what they do incredibly well. So I don't know. I don't know if there's anything that I would out and out replace, or I'd want to replace. I feel like that's a question I might have to stew on a bit, to kind of come across, to see if I can come up with a better answer. I'll think in the future, maybe.
As far as what's upcoming, I know you spoke about For the King. There's some stuff you can't talk about, but there are any other projects that you can tell us about that's coming up? And also, where can we follow you to, see your upcoming work?
Right now, I've got For the King in development. There's been there's a really weird, wonderful game that I'm working on called Dead by the Sword, it's real dumb. It's a game where you play as your dad, you delve into the deepest, darkest bowels of the earth to find the infinity nut, the sacred snack from which all salted snacks spring.
Oh.
And you have to retrieve it and get out alive. It's a very interesting game with 150% realistic one-to-one mouse-to-sword combat, it's pretty impressive. So I'm looking forward to working on that in the future. There is For the King. There is, I'm trying to think of like what I can actually say about stuff. I'm working on a little indie strategy game, strategy kind of, it's almost a throwback, a little Advance Wars feeling in some ways, called The Rise of Mooncrest, which is on Kickstarter right now. It's a little thing, it's up there, and it's kind of cool, and I'm very excited to work on that score, because I'm playing, like, 40 brass instruments live on it, and that'll be fun. And then there's, I can't talk about that one. There's some cool stuff in the future that, rest assured, you'll be able to find out more about. But if you want to find out more about that, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at John Robert Matz, just all one word, run together. Or you can follow me on my website, johnrobertmatz.com. I'm on Facebook, too. You can look me up there. I have a artist page, etc. I try to echo my big kind of announcements and stuff on there. As well, there's a WordPress blog you can get to from my site. I try to like put up things about like a little background about stuff, some behind the scenes or behind the music, I should say, features from time to time. And that's pretty much it, unless I'm forgetting something. Oh yeah, SoundCloud. You can also listen to all kinds of nonsense that I'm working on. Sometimes it's bits of work in progress stuff. Sometimes it's little sneak peeks of things. Sometimes it's full release tracks. But if you just search for John Robert Matz again on SoundCloud, you should find me. And that's basically it.
Well, I mean, that's awesome. I mean, not going back to everything from the games that you played and everything like that and stuff that you're working on, it's just really awesome to have a chance to talk with you. So I want to thank you very much, John, for coming on and talking with us today.
Likewise. Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure. And look forward to seeing more from you in the future.